Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
After the day I've had, honestly, that is minor. Seriously, okay. Minor.
Right. In fact, I'm just going to refresh the whole thing to make sure. No, I'm not. It's actually recording now. Because, I can see a wave line thing. Mm. Right. You might want to edit this bit of buffoonery out. Okay, stand by.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
You're listening to Sunday's episode of The Archers from BBC Radio 4.
Dum ti dum ti dum ti dum dum ti dum ti da da dum ti dum ti dum ti da dum ti diddly dum dum ti diddly dum ti diddly dum ti diddly dum dum ti dum ti dum ti dum ti dum ti diddly dum.
And after a false start, it still makes me laugh on a second hearing. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the mathematical Doberman, that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the mongrel choking on a peanut butter. A piece of peanut butter. We're not starting it again.
Don't have that again.
With me I have the mongrel choking on a piece of peanut butter that is Lucy Freeman, and the last part of the Ambridge summer fate that is slightly worse than death, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum comes from Quentin Bennett. It was an oldie but a goodie. Lucy, if someone wants to send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or have to explain to a county magistrate why, while arresting a drug dealer, you felt the need to dress as Jerry Halliwell, call us on 0203 0313 105 or leave us a message on Speakpipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups. And we all need to send poor old Cosmo a big get well soon because he is in Germany on a cruise ship and his gallbladder has exploded. Bits of his gallbladder are all over the EC.
Poop deck.
Yeah. Very good.
Sorry.
So it's incredibly painful. Anyone that's had gallbladder things knows how blooming painful it is. So he's waiting for them to operate on it, take it out, put it back in, or shake it all about, or something. I don't know. But anyway, he's in a lot of pain. So send all your nice messages to poor old Cosmo, please. Thank you also to Shambridge for her voices, Mike Hatton for his character count, and to Derek Malone in the back bedroom. Derek's in trouble with harassment, Burns, as he got caught breaking the hosepipe ban this week. Ooh. Auntie Cardboard reported him for waving it around in the back garden.
This week, we hear from Witherspoon, Blythe Spirit, and Bernie. But first, before the caller inners, let's brace ourselves for Lucy V. Freeman's, well, actually, fortnight in Ambridge.
Let's get the bloody fate over with quickly. Emma Grundy got papped falling over a dog, and Lavinia Rafferty got her schnauzer out, and as a result, won pets piss all over the place. In the meantime, Ruth had forgotten her phone again. Didn't she forget it before when something alarming happened? We'll be able to tell as we move nearer to the pending apocalypse, because the second we hear Ruth saying, "Oh no, I think I've forgotten me phone," Trump will have launched something. Rex found a heavily pregnant woman doubled up with pain in the farmyard, breathing heavily and bellowing, and said, "Is it the baby?" "No, Rex, it's sinusitis." Anyway, he put her in the minicab and only charged a half rate, which was kind of him. Ruth did the breathing bit, told her to calm down and shut up about her bloody mixtape, and Rex hung her dressing gown up. What a hero. Then Tobes the Timely arrived. "Break Torby's hand if you need to," encouraged Ruth. "Kick him in the nuts. Smash his face in. Look, I've got a list here." Debbie retired defeated to Hungary. I hope you don't mind, but I've taken my old jewellery box before you flog the jewellery and pawn the bloody ballerina. Home Farm is going on the market. 40 years of bitterness, angst, infidelity, crying and screaming rows. Would suit someone with no ability to absorb atmospheres whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Or possibly emotional ghoul. Jenny wants to show the house off to the best advantage, which she can't do with Lillian lying on her back under the white wine fridge with a siphon and Kate's room full of phallic lava lamps, stubbed out joints and patchouli-drenched knickers. There can't be many homes like this coming onto the market, said Jenny. Ones that glow in the dark. You'd think it'd be a boon in the winter evenings. Having a new niece has changed things for Rex. We need to talk about Horsey Town, he said to Anisha. I'm not going. I don't like horses, and I'm not that keen on you, truth be told. I don't see myself anywhere other than Ambridge, because I have such a thriving life here. I don't really have any friends. I spent months living in a chicken shed, and now I live with a senile pensioner who keeps talking to his dead wife and reading poetry about vegetables. I spend my working day being shouted at by a despotic adolescent, and I spend every weekend hoovering WKD-flavoured vomit out of the back of a minicab. You can see why I wouldn't want to leave. Anisha was clearly not that fussed either. If we'd met at a different time, or you weren't in love with the woman who's just given birth to your brother's baby, things could be different. As it is, though, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. If any listeners did make any emotional investment in Anisha, if you've kept the receipt, you are entitled to a refund. In more romantic news, the Fallasment wedding continues apace. Alice is doing a reading, because the ideal choice of public speaker is, of course, someone with an acute adenoid problem. And Chris is the best man. Or to be more accurate, the only man. He was struggling with the speech, which is understandable, as he's barely spent more than two evenings with harassment, and on both of those, he was trying to entice his wife down from a tree. Now, if you had a best man who was struggling to find anecdotes to put in your best man's speech, the ideal thing to do would be to tell them that you had spent your formative years dressed as Jerry Halliwell and taking your clothes off for screaming hen parties, and then insist that he didn't use it. Lavinia flashing her schnauzer at Alice Stone Public has set Shula off good and proper. That and the fact that he started trying to invoice her for services rendered over the last couple of years. Just totting up my figures. 8 attempts at sex. 2 successful as long as I wore army uniform. 1 holiday to Norway to sit in silence eating raw fish. That'll be £16.98, check payable to William Hill. Thank you. Then Giles from Buffy turned up, which was a surprise for everybody. Jill tried to get him have a cup of tea because she'd gobbed in it, but instead he cracked open the champers and announced he was going to walk down memory lane, which happily took him right past Lower Loxley, where he had a cup of coffee and a gallon and a half of Chateau tent flap. Then he went out for dinner at Gay Grable's and had a bottle of white and a bottle of red. The man must have a liver the size of Aberdeen. Let's hope he doesn't meet Alice. Anyway, he's snobby and horrible, and we can now see exactly where Toby gets his dubious charm from. He watched David milk some cows and discovered that if you do it right, the yield goes up. Robin generally finds that a nice vouvray and a pate de foie gras has much the same effect on the right woman. No sooner had Anisha's horse box disappeared onto the bypass than Topper heaved a sigh of relief and died. At least he died with both eyes, the poor old sod. Blimey, Hannah's warm and bubbly, isn't she? Quite the little charmer. If she upsets our need, it'll be pitchforks at dawn. Never mind the villagers. The listeners will be hauling Hannah up Portland Place strapped to a wicker man. Then Pip and Toby brought little Rosie home. I don't know how long Pip's discharge will be, said Toby. Oh, my God, we don't need that much ruddy detail, surely. She clambered out of the car while David and Toby scrapped over who was going to help her out. Ben was overcome and went silent, and Josh told her she looked good, glowing. I've had 2 cesareans. If you've just had a cesarean, you don't look glowing. You're off your head on morphine, so everything else is glowing. You look half dead. Your boobs look like scalded Polaris missiles, and you're not a bit sore. You can't even yawn without feeling like you're going to fall in half like a badly done magic trick. And then Rosie met Hootie. Hello, you don't know me yet, but I'm your great-granny Jill. You'll like me at first because I'm quite cakey, but the second you cross me, you'll regret it. You will carry the archer's baton unto the next generation. Let the madness continue. The end.
Oh, do you know what? I've missed those. I have indeed. I think I deserve... I've kept the receipt for Anisha.
Did you make the investment in Anisha?
I wouldn't say it was emotional, but it had a ewel at the end anyway. Do you know what? And speaking of Horsetown, I was in many years ago, a friend and I were going through Newmarket and we were in a pub having a pint. And after we had one pint, that was it. And I turned to him and said, with some amount of puzzlement in my voice, and said, "There are an awful lot of short people in this pub. That's really weird, isn't it?" And then a very large penny dropped and concussed me, in fact. I said, "They're all bloody jockeys, you idiot." I said, "Oh, yeah."
Were you wondering if you'd grown?
Well, yeah.
I'm enormous. What's happening?
I thought I was in the Land of Oz, or it was break time at Willy Wonka's factory. But they were. It was remarkable, remarkable. But there we are. That's my only anecdote of the episode. Yeah, it's Robin.
I just now, when you think of him, do you think of him doing the instant coffee? Do you think of him as Giles from Buffy? Or what's the latest thing he's been in?
I don't know.
I've gone completely blank. There's another thing.
Well, someone on Twitter said, who's given a role to the Listerine dragon? And I thought that was quite... Because he is quite over the top, but he has to be, doesn't he, I think?
But he's the alt... I do love the way... Jill's put down was brilliant.
Oh yes, that was. I.
She said we've got enough. I know what your brand of charm is, and we've got enough of that here. And I thought, woohoo!
That was pretty good. Who and wrote that episode? Was that a Kerry episode?
I don't think so. No, right. But I did also like the way when Elizabeth gave him the brush off and said, "Well, anyway, it's been lovely to see you." And he went, oh, right, yes. You know, and they're having a matey thing. But I do think, I mean, I know it was a while ago that they saw each other.
Mm.
But if I'd ended up, you know, having an abortion from someone who was married and, you know, it nearly sort of ripped my family in half sort of thing, I don't think I'd be sitting having a jolly glass of wine with him. However.
No. And introducing your two children.
Yeah.
One of whom might well be going away to a special hotel soon. Yeah, that was a bit odd.
Yeah.
So why have they done that?
Well, I mean, are we supposed to think that she's going to get back with him? Because it didn't sound like that to me.
No. I guess if they hadn't have had that scene, people would have been saying, well, I wonder what would happen if they met each other. Surely yeah. They'd bump into each other. But bumping into each other in the street or whatever, or in some other situation, might have been more realistic.
Yeah. Then, because it was sort of like, oh, goody, he's here. And then there was lots of giggling and, you know... They seem to be sort of reminiscing happily. And I thought, but surely that you don't sort of reminisce. You reminisce. If things just go a bit sort of, they just sort of fizzle out, then you reminisce about the happy times. But not when things have ended in sort of such spectacular drama, surely.
Yeah. The catastrophic end to a relationship is not an opportunity to walk down memory lane.
No.
And I should know. Anyway, what? And then Hannah. Yeah, Hannah is, because we've been wondering for a while, what is Hannah's purpose?
To be horrible, clearly.
I mean, she was kind of, I can understand why, I suppose she's a bit too sanctimonious and upstanding, isn't she? Or what she was saying, the stuff she was saying to Neil.
Yes, but it was based around the fact that she wanted one of those houses. And she could suddenly see herself being done out of one because of Neil and Emma.
But are we discounting that she's going to run off with? Who was it they said she was going to run off with? Helen.
Yes. It'd be easy to say who people didn't think she was going to run off with, because it was Jazza for a while, then it was Helen. Then it was Kirsty. Then it was, who else was it? Oh, Neil, for a while, people thought that she might have been an affair with Neil.
Well, that's certainly not going to happen now.
No.
Definitely not.
But she... there's just a sort of a level of aggrieved self-righteousness about her.
Oh, with which I can sympathise.
Which, yeah, it's kind of... that puts people's backs up immediately before, you know, even if she has got right on her side, the way she sort of delivers it makes you think, right, well, I hope you don't ever get what you want, you horrid old cow.
Well, she's definitely a stirrer,
yeah.
if that's the correct term for that kind of character. I'm sure that, you would know this as a writer, that there are different terms for different types of characters, aren't there? And I can't quite think of...
Well, she's an agitator, yeah. She's sort of
an accelerant
you can have as well, where someone comes on and Susan's an accelerant, you know. She'll find a different slant on things that makes things 100 times worse, extrapolate it to a horrible end, and then everyone's suddenly worried about a new thing that hadn't even crossed their minds before she started talking. But then Susan is so naughty when she said... Well, it's about time we got a bit of good, you know, it's about time this we used our influence to do this family a bit of good. And
I thought,
bloody hell, you can't say things like that. Emma will end up being fired before she started.
Yeah, well, and Neil as well.
Yeah. But, you know, poor Emma. I mean, Neil probably got prodded into standing by Susan. I can't remember. But Emma did it all off her own back because she genuinely felt impassioned about something.
Yeah.
And now Susan's going to stuff it up for her because Susan just sees it as a way of as leverage.
She has this pretense of having high moral standards, but as soon as she can see that... it will benefit her to forget those high moral standards. She will forget them, which is oft the way of many Daily Mail reading Tory voters.
Yeah.
But gosh, yeah. I've been controversial already, and it's only 17 minutes in.
But yeah, I mean, you do read so many stories about, you know, planning committees being, you know, locally planning committees being hijacked or certain families being able to get things through, and then it turns out that they're or employed as consultants, and then, you know, private eye always says, but what, you know, what a surprise to discover that she's married to blah, 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 and, you know.
But I guess because there's so little engagement and involvement from many other members of the community that if you get involved in something like that, you can
run amok.
You can have a much greater influence than perhaps you would if democracy actually worked.
Yeah. But this is what Susan does. You know, Susan is the epitome of that saying, you know, this is why you can't have nice things. Because she gets an opportunity, and then she always cannot resist going that little bit too far. It's like an internal saboteur, and then having it taken away from her again. And then she can have a lovely old moan about how things never work out for people like us, you know. And it's always her that's done it.
If things go wrong in this situation, it could be quite disastrous, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Neil loses his job. Yeah. That, nowhere for Emma and Ed to live.
Yep.
And...
I've had a new plot prediction.
Oh, right, yep.
I'm feeling quite fecund with plot predictions at the moment because I made one last time I was on, didn't I? This one is that they don't sell Home Farm.
Yeah.
They sell half of it and convert it into flats.
Okay.
They sell off a bit of it. Because I think it's a funny shape, isn't it? Isn't it like an L shape or something? Houses with swimming pools.
I have no idea. I mean, I haven't seen the aerial view for a while, but it's big, isn't it?
I think there's a bit, a sort of a standalone bit, and I think they could convert that into flats or, you know, executive housing and sell it off. So then they'll be able to stay there, but they won't have such an imposing house, and it will be deliciously complicated having people they don't want living next door to them. Living next door to them. Ha ha ha.
I still don't understand why they don't remortgage it.
They can't. I mentioned that or Royfield did last week, and someone emailed to say that they remembered him saying, "I'm already mortgaged to the hilt."
Okay. Okay. It's going to be, they're not going to move to Penyhassett or anything like that. They're not going to live in a warden controlled flat in Borchester, are they? I mean, that would be good. That's when you'd want Ambridge Extra, isn't it? Brian pressing his red button because the corks snapped on his latest bottle of claret.
You can't get Pornhub on the remote control. Ring Debbie. Yeah. Ring Debbie. She'll know. She'll know.
Quite possibly. Well, it was nice having Debbie back. But
it was, fleetingly. And then she cried. I felt quite sad about that bit.
Mm. Yeah, one of those, it's that kind of thing where when the last era, the olden, I can't think of the word, but you know what I mean, when a particular era of your life and your family life is over, and you mourn it, don't you? And I think we all go through those things when parents get older or when they retire or move away, or but this is amplified and magnified because it's all brought upon by the King Rat, I suppose.
And also, Debbie has always been incredibly protective of Jennifer. Really has. I mean, phenomenally. So this kind of an almost overly protective, I guess, because, you know, of her upbringing and everything. And
Brian's behaviour in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And she's just seen him betray her mother so often and so blatantly and has had to just suck it up because her mother did. that she's sort of fiercely alert to anything that might impact on Jennifer. So I think it really upset her to see, you know, Jenny Darling being sort of stoic, and it was genuinely upsetting, I thought.
Shall we let the caller inners have their say?
Yes.
Well, it's Witherspoon first, because it's my first time back in a while. I've forgotten to put the phone call thing in, so I'll do it myself. Ambridge 6942.
She's not Scottish.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Milliabelle, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. So this week, Robin Fairbrother dominated the Archers, and I'm sure will be the topic of many of today's calls. First off, while Robin is not an uncommon first name for English males, it is disconcerting for the American ear to hear a man be called Robin, except when talking about Batman. Just wanted to get that out of the way. There was much chatter that Robin would be moving to Ambridge and wreaking all sorts of havoc, but a man with so much pretension would never find a village like Ambridge an acceptable place to live. So why did the elder Fairbrother parachute in for the week? Well, remember, The Archers is a family-based rural docudrama, so it wouldn't make sense for Robin not to visit his first grandchild and finally meet the child's mother. As important, we've learned a bit more about and the dynamics between Rex and Toby through Robin. Rex at 30 is a little older than I thought he was and makes me wonder why he hasn't yet been able to establish himself. We know that Robin, while he doesn't always approve of Toby's behaviors, clearly sees him more of a chip off the old block. Solid-state Rex is just not Robin's cup of tea, or vintage of wine in this case, and he clearly treats Toby better than Rex. Could you believe that he didn't invite Rex to join Toby and him for dinner? Robin then plied David with a few glasses of port and got him to agree to take a softer approach with Toby. Quite manipulative of him. Well, it's clear that Rex and Toby aren't leaving Ambridge for a long, long time. I think I finally made my peace with that. The real heroine of the week was Jill, who threw some wicked verbal flapjacks Robin's way. So I think Robin will shortly be saying goodbye to Ambridge. And now I must say goodbye for today. Talk to you all soon.
Well, he's right. The Robin is just there for a week.
Yeah.
And to give a little bit of background to why those two boys are as they are. But, you know, I'm all those months ago, and I think I put 10 pence on it, or it may even been 50, that I still think Toby and Pip will get together.
Yeah, Toby and Pip. Rex and Pip.
Oh, not Rex and Pip. You can't have that. That's what. That's mirroring the Grundy relationships, isn't it?
You think she's going to get back together with Toby?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Father of her child. Loving father of her child. That is now being accepted by David. Softened up. Yeah.
No.
You know what? I'm going to double it to a pound. I'm going to have to call my stockbroker.
No, that is never going to happen.
Well, in Brexit Britain, whatever you think won't happen will happen.
Oh, no, I think Rex.
What? But don't you think that's too similar to...
Yeah, and he's not dynamic enough, is he?
No.
I did like
how end up with Hannah.
Like getting, by the way, Witherspoon, it's so nice to hear you sound like your old self again. It's lovely.
Yes.
And also, verbal flapjack.
Classic line.
Jill's verbal flapjack is excellent. I did like David and Giles from Buffy getting pissed together on port. That was quite funny. David sort
yeah,
of
I mean,
gently. You can't imagine that Robin Fairbrother had about 7 glasses to David's 1, and David was sort of giggling and dribbling. You know?
Yeah, he had a thimble full of Graham's LBV.
Yeah.
And
I've never had anything so nice in my
life. I love you, Robin. You know what? I might have to listen back and see if Robin's opining about wine is accurate.
Oh, it will be.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Well, he was right about there being a lot of very good small producers of champagne.
Yes.
That's true. So, listeners, champagne socialist tip from Dumpty Dum. If you're going to buy champagne, actually, Sainsbury's own brand Taste the Difference champagne, usually around Christmas when there's a good deal on it, it's very good. Just buy as much as you can afford. Or smaller no-name producers. Very good, because you're not paying for the label. Verve, Moët & Chandon. I can't remember another brand of champagne. Mum. Mum's the word. Come on, you can imagine. You can think of some more. Lou Roderham.
I'm enjoying listening to you struggling.
You used to do that every week or every other week before. I'm just pretending I don't know all these names of champagne because it does make me sound too much like Robin. I know people are now going to call in and say, oh, doesn't Robert sound like Robin? Because it used to be Rob and now it's going to be bloody Robin that people think I am.
You don't sound anything like him.
Okay. I do a bit because I've got a bit of a throat at the moment. I've had it for a while and I'm slightly worried that I'm going to sound like... That's a very bad impression. I'll stop now.
You don't sound anything like him.
Okay.
Rest assured.
Fair enough. Shall we hear from Blythe Spirit
yes.
now?
Hello, Dumpty Dum, Blythe Spirit calling. Well, I just wanted to throw in my 2 penneth this week about Lexi, Roy and Adam because it did gripe me a little bit. Now... The fact that Lexi is basically renting her uterus and her body to produce a child for Adam and Ian for 9 months does not mean that they get to dictate who she sees, where she goes, and what she does. She just wants to go back to Bulgaria to see her children, which is perfectly fair and reasonable. And Adam seemed to be putting the kibosh on that, or when are we going to do the next transfer? I mean, firstly, Adam... She's a free agent. You don't own her. And secondly, it's her body. You may be renting her uterus for 9 months, but the transfer is going to be causing her some upheaval hormonally. For God's sake, give the woman a break. As for Roy, the fact that she seems to be going away for a few weeks is causing a major relationship crisis. Oh my God, she's abandoning me. No, she's not, Roy. She just wants to go and see her children. End of. Now, this is a little bit of a personality transplant, isn't it? Because previously, when Roy and Lexi got together, he seemed to be perfectly fine about the fact that they were going to be having the possibility of a distance relationship. Pop on a plane, go over to Sofia, no problems at all. Now, it's a major problem. I don't know. Anyway, yes, I'm afraid I'm going to have to, as a fully paid up feminist, get the old membership card out here, wave it around a bit and say, yeah, don't treat Lexi like this. It's not cool. Okay? Yeah. Anyway, I hope everyone out there is well in Dumpty Dum Land, and Lucy, that you had a wonderful, rejuvenating holiday. Hopefully I will speak to you again soon. Cheers now. Bye.
I'm going to get my associate feminist card out. There it is. Oh, it's a little dog-eared. But I know what you're saying, Millie Bell. Blithe Spirit, even. Oh, I found it that bit out. I know what you're saying, Blithe Spirit, sorry. But you can understand why Roy feels a little insecure in this situation. And he's worried that she's not going to come back. I think that's what he's worried about. He's not trying to control her. He's concerned.
You do get the impression that when Lexi says she's doing something, Adam would love to say, well, yes, okay, you go, but could you leave your uterus behind? And Roy would quite like her to leave her bits and pieces behind, you know. And, you know, no one actually cares about what she wants. It's just, but how is this going to affect me? That's kind of what it comes across to me anyway.
Okay.
That's what I think. Who is next?
It is Bernie.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, you two. This is Bernie Mag ringing from Madrid at 39 degrees in the shade. And that's centigrade, of course. And I'm, as you know, a joint secretary, along with Sheila _, of Dumpty Dum Siblings. Still no applications, but we live in hope. My contribution today is going to be a little bit about the class system and the posh twits that appear in the Archers. It was nice to hear my sister on Dumpty Dum last week, even though she betrayed my confidence by telling you all about my secret passion for Brian, which I'm sure not many people are going to be interested in. But this passion actually grows by the day, even if he is a little bit of an upper class twit, especially since the appearance of Robin Fairbrother on the scene. Now, there's a real upper class twit for you. Hopefully he'll cause a bit of trouble during his stay. Oh, and wasn't Jill fantastic speaking her mind like that? I mean, I'm not usually very keen on Jill, but she's really redeemed herself this week. It was almost as good as Flapjack Gate. So that was fantastic. But I have to say, the prize to beat all the upper class twits this week it goes to Freddie. And it's a bit of a shame, as I've always had a soft spot for Freddie, because I think he's probably quite a nice lad. But honestly, Freddie, everything he does and the way he acts and the mistakes he makes all seem to be tied up to his enormous sense of entitlement. He never thinks anything's going to happen. All his behaviour is because he doesn't think anything's going to happen to him because he's too wealthy or he's too privileged. And then when something does go wrong, he's like, Mum, help. No, that can't possibly happen. Anyway, I'm running out of time, so speak to you soon. Bye.
Well, she timed that pretty well, I thought.
See, oh God, he's such a pillock, isn't he? But it was he is one of those characters that I was genuinely sad for him that Topper had died, and because he sounded really properly upset.
Yeah,
and you know, I think losing any animal for a young person, well, for, you know, the death of an animal is always incredibly sad. But then he sort of switched into this mum thing and just went suddenly sounded like a snotty 7-year-old, you know, a really spoilt little brat, like a little boy again. And I mean, I know that adolescents do tend to swing from, you know, one to the other. They feel terribly grown up, but they'll still hurtle back to childhood, given half a chance. But it, I don't know. I went from going, "Oh, Freddie," to, "Oh, Freddie," within about 2 seconds.
But out of all the teenagers in the Archers, he's not the worst, is he? I mean, Josh is he's less my favourite than him. Josh annoys me more than Freddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that a sigh of disagreement or resignation?
I don't know. I think at least Josh is realistic. Freddie's just floats around in this little bubble.
But he's been brought up in a little bubble.
This sort of untouchability, you know.
Well, that's not his fault. That's an artifact, the nature of his upbringing.
Yeah.
That's inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, because, I mean, bloody Lily is in as much of a dream world as Freddie is, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, honestly thinking that this thing with this teacher is going to work out. So they've both lived in this little isolated, very protected world.
Hmm.
You know.
But the world always comes to bite you on the bum, doesn't it?
Yeah. But, yes, I can't wait for Elizabeth because, you know, she has always held Lily up as kind of, oh, thank God there's Lily, because Freddie's such a nightmare. And then when she finds out what she's been doing, it's going to be lovely.
Yeah, but it's going to be easy to get out of that, isn't it? Unless there's another unexpected pattering of tiny feet
on
the way.
Can't have the pregnancy, surely.
No.
No.
Let's hope not.
Yes, no. That's too many. Otherwise, I would seriously be worried about the quality control at Worcester's closest condom factory, because it's clearly
Well, I think Fallon's selling upcycled or recycled ones.
Just give them a quick
in the cafe.
Wash, it'll be fine.
Oh, the very thought. Yeah. The very thought.
That's all a caller in a row is.
That is. Let's take a commercial break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to The Things That Made England. I'm Roy Phil Brown, and with me I have...
David Crowther of The History of England.
It was the best of time. It was the worst of time.
She was the people's princess.
We shall fight on the beaches.
Away, man. These are the things that made England.
We shall fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body, but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
It gives wind in Churchill's sails to say we can continue to fight on.
Well, there cannot be many more famous events in English history than 1066. It hurts, even now.
Because 1066 is important.
Yeah.
But there's aspects of modern British culture which I think get overlooked. So I'm proposing that this week we do Scar.
For me, the English flag has in the past certainly become associated with factionalism and, well, hideous racist and far-right views. And it's turned into a thing of disunity and almost xenophobia.
The idea of this show is to decide on what things that make England...
as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of.
Every week, one of us, that is David and I, will pitch an idea to the other to be designated as one of the things that makes England distinctive.
Go and join our shiny new Facebook site, where once a month we will post a poll where, should you so desire, you can make your own very suggestions for applications to the I Made England Award. So, without more ado, let's do it.
It was the best of time. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
To fight on the beaches.
Away, man. These are the things that made England.
To fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hi, this is Lucy, and you're listening to Walkie Talkie. Every day, I walk my dog in and around Epping Forest. And there's a regular group of dog walkers that catch up with each other. And the group of us, you know, we're from all kinds of different backgrounds. The one thing we have in common is that we all have dogs, obviously. And I sort of came up with the idea of recording these conversations because there's something quite confessional about walking side by side with somebody. There's no eye contact. You can just plod along. You know the names of their dog. You quite often don't know their name. You definitely don't know their surname. And it's just a very odd little hour out of the day, and you can get some really startling insights into people's lives because they know that you don't have a relationship with them outside of the dog. And also, if things get a bit, you know, emotional or a bit too close, you can distract yourself with whatever the dog's doing, or you get quite close to people in a remote way. It's an intriguing sort of mixture. With people's permission, obviously, I started recording some of the conversations. And it sort of grew, and now people ask if they can come on the walk even though they don't have a dog, because I think they just like the space to talk. So this is Walkie Talkie. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you in the forest.
Time now to catch up with the goings-on on Facebook and Twitter with the queen of social media, Ms. Millie Bell.
Good day, everyone. Wow, what an amazing week in Ambridge. So we started off by discussing Alistair and his relapse, and we were all a bit sad and disappointed for him. Jean Bell said sad for him, but not surprised. Pleased that he rang Maurice. I think the shock of Topper's death may be enough to help him stick to abstinence from gambling. Well, we hope so, Jean. Rob's Shosh said, I feel sorry for Alistair as Shula's injured party stance is wearing thin. Alistair ignoring Shula's calls is a good example of what can happen when there's a blurring of personal and professional boundaries. Alistair would probably have completed the blood tests and made a clinical emergency care plan if she hadn't raised the mediation. Lots more in that vein, and there was a lot of support for Alistair, but also a lot of concern that this story was being raised again. We loved Neil during the week. It was hilarious. Susan, you can't put a price on quality. Neil, I bet they managed. And then pointing out later on that most people don't have strong feelings about candlesticks. So we just had a bit of a wonder. Was Brian going to lose his crown as king of the one-liners? And Martin van den Heuvel said, to be fair, Kerry Davis is the king of the one-liners,
yep.
Which is true. But you know what I should have done and didn't? I should have checked whether Kerry Davis was the writer for this week. Oh, my bad. It doesn't tell us on the podcast, you see. Barbara Danielson was a bit concerned that Neil hadn't told Susan about Hannah. Yeah, and I did think that was odd too. And Terry Woodroffe said that Hannah has his heart after her apt description of Ambridge. Sheer bonkersness. That's such an English phrase, isn't it? It's wonderful. We also talked about Robin Fairbrother and whether we liked him. We don't. Connie Nolan said, well, no doubt who's the favourite son? Poor Rex, after he went and nursed him too. I think Robin's broke. He stopped the boys' allowance, so buying home farm? Question mark? Kerry Davis is writing the script, and we all know what a tease he is. There you go. Connie's just told me he was writing the script. Thank you, Connie. Pete Ranson says, plot prediction, Robin isn't going to get home farm. Instead, a property developer will pick it up and convert it into Riverside-style apartments with integrated AV system. It will include a few affordables, one of which Ed and Emma will pick up and end up living in the old manor.
Yes.
They'll call theirs Kismet. Wow, that's quite a specific plot prediction. We continued to talk about him because he called the taxi driver and we wanted to see if it was going to be Rex that picked it up, but we don't think it was. Gordon Bevered said, Anisha was all set to be the next vampire slayer. Mm-hmm, I see what you did there, Gordon. But her watcher was too late and she buggered off to put animals down in pastures new. How long before they allow Anthony Head to sing at us for an episode? And he's scared. Jenna Hershkowitz said, ooh, I'm about Jill, though. We have enough on this farm already. It was a masterstroke. I think that was talking about shit, if I remember. if only Rex was still driving taxis, think Robin would have refused to get in the car, question mark. And Bid Harrison said, brilliant scene. You could just see Robin sitting there trying to be charming as Jill's voice grew gradually louder as she drew closer and closer looking over him. I had a picture of him virtually squirming from underneath her menacing form and crashing towards the door, cartoon style. Wow, what vivid memories. And then we talked about Freddy, of course, and how silly he wasn't really at a police officer's stag do. And we just wondered how he would get out of that. And Dan Lord said, Freddy will be charged for his dealing. Elizabeth will be devastated, of course. Robin will step in to comfort her. They'll start a relationship to the horror of Jill and the rest of the Archer clan. Meanwhile, Freddy is awaiting trial. No previous, so he won't be held, but can't leave the country, so that puts pay to his South Africa trip. Eventually, he'll be found guilty of lesser role supply, first offence, and good grades at A-level, so community services and a fine, good job he's saved for his jaunt overseas. Now, there's a lot more in that vein, and I didn't know that he would avoid a more severe sanction because he had a dealing amount, but maybe I'm getting muddled with Australian rules. And Joanne Smith said that she thinks Lily's lies are also going to come out too. So if you'd like to read more on that thread, and there were certainly lots of opinions, lots of suggestions, lots of thoughts about it, please go to our Facebook page. We'd love to see you there. I am going to leave you in Yokel Bear's very capable hands for a couple of weeks while I go up north with 16-year-olds. So you can all think of me and either pee yourself laughing or nod in your support. But either way, I will leave you with Yokel Bear and I will speak to you all when I get back. And until then, of course, it's Huru.
Well, let's hope Yokel Bear is well enough to do next week's social media. Lucy, would you like to hit us with some tweets of the week?
Yes. Ruther Ian, it's been a long night for the Pargeter family, but don't worry, they've got lots of MDMA and uppers to get them through it. Clive Cook, at least a dead topper gives Shula something to flog. Andrew Horn, just as well Rosie was a heifer, otherwise Roof would have been out with the baler twine and had its knackers off. God. Brian Smiley, I think it would be a lovely mark of respect to Nigel if they threw Topper off the roof. And tweet of the week, I've just read an all-man one this week. Tweet of the week is from Matt Underwood. Ruth, get the carving jack. David, get your arm up there.
Ooh. I don't like that imagery. I really don't. Well, remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105. That's 0203 031 3105. 1-800-875-5905 to leave a message. You can find Roy Field and Lucy at Dumpty Dum. That's at Dumpty Dum. And Lucy is at Lucy V. Freeman. I can be found at Naked Fingers. All one word, obviously. Why would it be any different? I don't even know why I had to explain that. And there we are. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.